You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. By now, you've probably heard about artificial intelligence and what's been called a global arms race between the US and China to be world leaders in this field. Experts predict whoever pulls ahead could end up leading the world in economic growth, technological developments, and even warfare. I'm Sarah Custer, and this week I speak with Times Higher Education reporter Rachel Pels about Europe's catch-up efforts to compete in this field, and with Claire Carty, who is a professor in Cornell University's Department of Computer Science, about what this boom in AI investments could mean for academic researchers. First, Rachel Pels covered the European Commission's recent announcement to invest billions of euros into AI research. I speak to her about this story, as well as her recent trip to Imperial College London to see firsthand how the UK is advancing artificial intelligence. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me.
Pleasure.
You have covered the story about Europe joining the global AI race. Can you just start off and tell us exactly what is artificial intelligence?
It's a good question. In very basic layperson's terms, because I am a layperson, AI is machine-operated learning. So it's the ability for computers to think, to learn from previous information and use that learning experience to better function next time. This is my own definition. Don't hold me to it. I think an example of this would be your smartphone or your Fitbit. You know when your device asks you to remember your preferences for next time, or it will gather information on a wellness app to get a continuously improved picture of your general health. So essentially it learns from you how to do better, mimicking the way that the human brain works and learns from experience.
So this has gotten a major boost from the European Commission. How much has been promised?
So I should point out that the European Commission has called for 20 billion euros, which is about 17.6 billion pounds. That's not been confirmed by the EU. It's not been confirmed by the European Commission, I should say. It's the figure that they have pulled out of their analysis, detailing how much they estimate that we will need to build Europe's AI industry sufficiently to compete with other nations and other regions.
Right, so they've promised this amount, but really, why is the time that they're doing this now? I mean, you said they're trying to play catch up. What's the rush?
It's a hugely profitable industry. Experts say it's the next boom industry after the internet, online shopping, all of those things. The UK government has also released its report saying that AI could be worth £630 billion for the UK economy alone by 2035. So obviously it's going to make us a huge amount of money, we hope. But the rush, I suppose, is that there is this race going on for leadership in AI research. China in particular, Japan, Korea are all very far ahead in terms of the funding that they're putting into AI research and their robotics development in particular. So it's important for the UK and Europe to build up their own base of research so that we don't fall behind.
And I'm sure, especially for the UK, as it's looking towards Brexit and potential economic impacts of that, to have a solid industry that it could rely upon to continue to bring in economic growth would be hugely important.
Exactly. Interestingly, I think it's easy to jump to conclusions and think, oh, wouldn't it be awful if the UK was left out of this post-Brexit? Actually, the UK is far ahead of Europe in terms of our research on this. We've got a 50-year legacy, more, I think, in AI research that began with the Alan Turing Institute. We put together some figures from Elsevier to illustrate this point. If you look at AI research output alone, the UK is further ahead than any other European country. So we are leaders in this. And I think that's something that policymakers in the UK are very proud of. And actually, although it would benefit us, they say, to join with European efforts, we don't, the EU needs us as much as we need them.
In those Elsevier figures, who is at the top of that?
China is at the top by a long way.
And this is for the amount of money that's being invested in research into AI?
Well, both. So the Chinese government have invested a huge amount of money for this field in particular, because they've seen the connection that it has with boosting their economy. the figures that I'm referring to is research output, so just the sheer number of patents and papers that we're seeing in this field. China's far ahead. There were more than 12,000 total publications in 2017 from China on its own. The US is in second place, but they've got almost half that total. India and Japan are also very strong. The UK follows in about fifth place globally.
So going back to the European Commission's efforts to commit this large chunk of money to AI research, how are we going to see this play out? Is this going to be going towards mostly universities? Is this going to be supporting small businesses to start AI startups?
The exact details of that are not specifically clear in this report. There is a huge emphasis in the European Commission report about setting up new and building on existing research excellence centres across Europe. So that means more, presumably that means more places like the Alan Turing Institute, which specialise in this field. It's something that, in theory, universities will collaborate with the private sector on. Nick Jennings, who is the Vice Provost for Research in this field at Imperial University, he was talking to me the day about this and said that in an ideal world, and most practically, universities will collaborate with the private sector to either set up these new institutions with funding from the EU or build on the resources that universities already have. So, for example, that's something that Imperial are already doing. They have a collaboration with Google DeepMind on their campus. Private companies like Dyson as well, they also sort of, it's a collaborative affair, so they get some funding for it, but then Dyson will obviously put some of their own money in as well.
A lot of the material that the European Commission has been putting out about this financial boost to artificial intelligence contains a lot of rhetoric talking about they're doing this to ensure a European approach to AI with European values. What are they talking about there? What are European values?
I think this is most likely referring to the issue of ethics. A common thinking is that Europe can have an edge over Asia for our attitude towards responsible data collection and ethical research within AI. So that might make some people laugh right now, considering all the scandal we've been reading about in the news, Facebook, Cambridge Analytica, and the misuse of public data. It's obviously a big concern for people right now, what's happening to our personal data. But it's clearly something that both the European Commission and UK policymakers take very, very seriously. We've got some new regulations being published next month, the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, which will essentially set out a bunch of rules about who has access to data, how they'll have access to it, responsible data sharing, and securing citizens' personal data against hacking and fraud. So that this idea of European values, a few people have commented that actually, China might be far ahead on the technical side, but we have a more ethical understanding of our use of data, and having moral standing will help us in our development in a way that perhaps we won't see in Asia.
It's an interesting moral position to take on a very scientific field.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? I mean, I should point out these are other people's words. I was speaking to Dame Wendy Hall, who's Professor of Computer Sciences at the University of Southampton, and she was also involved in the making of the UK White Paper report. She wrote out a series of recommendations, and one of the main things that she focused on was this issue of ethics. She's argued that this would give us a high ground and position us well to compete with the US and China, because actually China doesn't have that level of trust with the public. We have much higher regulation in the UK and Europe. Actually, I also heard that a number of global investors look to the UK and Europe for investment because they like that aspect of the business, over the approach of China or even the US, who don't have these regulations in place. It's an element of trust, I think, for both the public and the investors.
Interesting. I mean, Europe does have the tightest regulations around data and privacy in the world, especially compared to the US and China.
Right.
So what does this mean for the future of universities? I'm thinking more along the lines of the future of learning in universities, or how AI could potentially be played out on campuses.
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity for universities. I think it'll be really important for them to remain at the centre of this research. The European Universities Association raised some concerns about the European Commission's report in that this idea of setting up new research centres, they said, you know, we need to actually make sure the resources and responsibilities aren't taken away from universities who are already involved in this and sort of given too heavily towards the private sector, because this will become universities' lifeblood in the future. So the best and most practical option will be to forge connections that support both public and private sectors, a bit like what LSE is doing now. In terms of the way that AI will shape the future of teaching and learning, there's also some mention in both the UK and the EC's report about the importance of independent nations investing their own time and money and resources into updating the learning environments at universities. So we need to make sure that university labs have all the most up-to-date equipment so that the new generation of AI scholars will be most up-to-date and be able to sort of carry this on, so we don't end up with this gap in between all the work that's happening now and the next couple of generations down the line.
And that was our reporter Rachel Pels. While we're seeing an eye-watering amount of money being invested in AI, most of the funding in China and the US is coming from private tech giants like Google, Facebook, and Tencent. Claire Carty, a researcher specializing in natural language processing at Cornell University, says this doesn't translate into more funds for academics. As a researcher who's been working in AI for the better part of 3 decades, I started out by asking her how she's seen the field evolve.
Yeah, it's been, I don't know, in some ways it's kind of what goes around comes around, in that some of the topics that were really being studied when I first started working in the area fell a bit out of favor, and now they're coming back. But in general, there's been a huge advances in both machine learning and my main area, which is natural language processing.
And what were some of the things that fell out of favor and that you've seen come roaring back?
This focus on neural networks, and now it's being called deep learning. But that sort of methodology had been popular in the mid-80s and early 90s, and then because of inability of the machines to be fast enough for computation, it kind of fell out of favor, and now it's back.
And when you say deep learning, can you expand on that a little bit? What does that mean, and what does that actually look like on kind of like a practical level?
So for deep learning, it's the models are based loosely on how neurons work, and the idea is that that with a neuron you need a certain amount of activation before the neuron will fire, and then once it reaches some level of activation, then it fires along all of its axons. And so the neural network models are based on this, and they're just a collection of these computational neurons that then get trained by giving it examples of the thing that you want it to learn. And deep learning just means that there are, in the past you used to use maybe one or two layers of these neurons, computational neurons, but now the networks can be much bigger and much, much deeper. And so the computation can be more complex.
I see. So it's just kind of like an expansion of the capacity of a system to learn.
Yes.
And you, as you said, you're involved in natural language processing. That's your kind of area of the field of AI. What are you currently working on at the moment?
At the moment, so I have a lot of students right now, for me, a lot of students, and they're working on different things. But I guess two of the main themes are, one is in the area of information extraction, and there it's been around for a long time, but the idea is that you build systems that try to identify some key or important facts in a text. And usually you know ahead of time the kinds of things you're looking for. So in a news article, you might want to know the date that it happened, the time, what kind of an event was happening, who were the people involved. And so this kind of technique is used a lot as a way of taking text that's just in a written form and then creating a database of facts or information from a lot of text. So working on that. And then the other area, which I'm actually maybe even a little more excited about, is in the area of argumentation. And so whereas information extraction, you try to understand the facts of in a text or a document, what we're looking at now is how to look at online text, either user comments or debates, to try to pull out the structure of the argument that's being made in the text. So it's a little bit different. And in line with that, we're also trying to understand what is it about the language of the argument that makes it persuasive, and how does a person's prior beliefs affect their interpretation of that argument. So this is it's partially natural language processing and partially computational social science.
What are the real-world applications for something like this? I mean, I could see it being useful for the legal field or for academic researchers, but when you're doing that type of work, do you have in mind some sort of real-world practical application?
Yeah, so we have in mind two kinds of applications. One is if you're trying to get trying to make a decision about something, maybe it's even a decision about who to vote for, or what to think about a particular controversial topic. Right now, you can look online, but the information is kind of scattered all over the place, or it can be in a bunch of comments where people are partially ranting, but other comments are actually providing some useful information on a topic. So one is to be handed a topic of interest, and then we can go out and search on the web for pro and con articles on or arguments on the topic, and then put together a little synopsis for a person, so that just to make it easier to find out both sides of the story and maintain pointers back down into the documents where you found support for those points.
Wow.
I mean, the other is for educational purposes. So, kids and adults, for that matter, are not that great at making coherent, good arguments, and so this can be maybe in an educational context to look at kids who are trying to write argumentative essays and then provide some automated scoring that could, or at least prompt them to say, well, here's a place you made a point, but you didn't provide any support for that. Do you have any facts that can back it, or do you have a citation, or even just an anecdote that can back that last point? So that's the other areas is in education.
I'd like to hear your thoughts about how you think AI could change the higher education learning experience.
Yeah, so I had thought about this a little bit. I mean, initially my thought was, well, maybe it would help lower levels of education in the ways that I'm describing with with tutoring systems and ways to help teachers get quick scores on essays or answers to questions. But for higher education, I think the main thing is that it can help. It actually goes beyond higher education, but anytime you're trying to look for lots of, through complicated collections of articles or commentary and to make sense of it, at least in natural language processing, that's where I see that now maybe higher education will change because there can be automated methods that help you better find what you need when you're doing research. So that's still quite far away. The other place that I think that generally AI methods will help is in better collaborative tools. So being able to work with groups of people who might not be in the same place and they're sharing materials. Right now there are applications that can help you organize meetings, but it doesn't really help to make the meetings work well. And so things that can enhance on online collaboration, I think, might change higher education a lot.
Which would be great for researchers who are doing cross-border collaborations, but also perhaps students who are on a distance learning course.
Right, that's right.
We are featuring a news story in the podcast this week that's about the European Commission's investment into AI research. And a lot of the headlines talk about the European Union finally joining the AI race. And in those same pieces, they talk about the U.S. leading that race. And I was just wondering what your opinion is as an academic working in this field. Do you pay attention to that type of rhetoric at all? And is it something that you're concerned about, the U.S. potentially losing its top spot in this AI race?
So I think different people would have different answers. Certainly, my colleagues and I are worried about this a bit, because it has seemed that the U.S. had been in the lead in AI, but investment in AI now is much harder to get grants now than it used to be, and a lot of AI research is getting done in companies, and so it's not getting published as much, and so that means that if this continues happening, then I think that the U.S. might start falling in the area of AI. So Europe has made investments. China has already made huge investments in AI, and we don't really see the national government entities here really doing the same.
Is it difficult to get research funding for AI projects in your experience?
Well, it's all relative. So it has been getting much harder over the years. More people, I guess, are involved in research, so the competition is more fierce. But the government spending hasn't really kept up with the research grant needs. It's hard. The grants tend to be small, and so if you have a large group, then you need many, many grants to be covering the support for your PhD students.
And I imagine if a lot of the research and a lot of the investment is being made in the private sector with Google, Facebook, Uber, I mean, there are tons of big tech giants that are investing serious cash into AI right now. I'm just wondering, where do ethics go in that? And is it something that there should be concern raised about the ethics in the development of AI technologies through these private companies?
Yeah, we always emphasize ethics in the teaching of AI, but where it really comes to bear is when those technologies are getting implemented in products and used for real, not just in a research setting. So I think in the companies is the place where with every new product, every new advancement in self-driving cars, we have to have the company within the company has to have some discussion about what should really be happening and what things are kind of maybe not too risky to put into actual use.
Do you think it is on the responsibility of the companies, or should the government establish some sort of agency that will regulate this type of work as it develops, monitor it?
I don't know. With regulation, I actually don't. I don't have a strong opinion either way.
Mm-hmm.
Does the government regulate ethics in other areas? Probably yes, right? So
I mean, I'm just thinking like medical ethics. I mean, there's definitely ethics there. It seems like AI is so new, but developing so quickly. You brought up the example of driverless cars. I mean, if people's lives are being put in danger by this technology.
Right. And that's exactly the kind of thing. I mean, where do you still need to keep a human in the loop? Where can the technology be reliable enough to be used properly without any human intervention? So my guess is that it's only a matter of time before governments start to catch up in terms of regulating technologies with AI as a basis. I don't know if that will how much good or bad that will do, but in the meantime, I mean, even regardless of that, within the companies, and then is a really good place to start, because that's where they really know they really know the methods and the systems that they're building better than anyone, and so they're in the best position to do what's right.
And that was Claire Carty, a professor in Cornell University's Department of Computer Science. That's it for this week's show. If you've got questions or suggestions, please do get in touch with me, sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.